Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I'm finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. I'm delighted to say that this podcast is sponsored by Peanut. Peanut is the app that helps you meet like-minded women who are trying to conceive, pregnant, or already mums. Peanut provides a safe space for women to build friendships, ask questions, and find support. Introducing you to women nearby who are at a similar stage in their journey, Peanut provides access to a community of women who are there to listen, share information, and offer valuable advice. Whether it's understanding IVF, PCOS, miscarriage, or pregnancy and beyond, Peanut is a place to connect with women who understand. I used to go to a weekly rhyme time class with Ren, and between the babies crying, the toddlers singing, and all the general noise and shenanigans, it could be really hard to stop and chat to some of the other mums. So when one of them connected with me on Peanut, it was fab. We made a beeline for each other at the next class and even went for a coffee together afterwards. Because of the app, it meant there was a friendly face in the room, which I have to say was just really lovely. You can download the app for free today. Head to peanut.app.link/finallypregnant or search for Peanut in your app store. And when you do, make sure you head over to the Finally Pregnant group. Hello there, how are you doing? I hope that you are well wherever you're listening. Here in Cambridgeshire, it is decidedly colder than it was. It's all good though, because you know what? I know that I am one of the lucky ones because I'm looking forward to Christmas this year. Because Ren's here, and also because of everything that 2020 has brought, I'm just looking for a new focus and I'm excited about that being something wonderful. But if you're trying to conceive, I do understand that it can be such a hard time of year, and for other reasons as well, it can be a difficult time of year. And I'm just sending out all the love to you, and I hope that you are seeking and getting the support that you need to get you through. I spent a bit of time recently making some cards using Ren's handprint, and it's something that I've wanted to do for over a decade. A friend of mine who now has a teenager sent me one of these cards when her teenager was a baby, and I loved it. And I thought, yeah, I can't wait to do that with my little one. And it obviously took much longer than I thought, but it was very, very, very special to finally make them recently. And I'm not going to lie, even ordering the bits and pieces from Hobbycraft made me emotional. I think Bob thought I was very strange. He hadn't grasped the importance of it until that point. And then he understood. And yeah, it was just really lovely. I actually made a reel about it, which I put on Instagram. So do head over to my Instagram and check it out there. And I popped a picture up of the card on my new Pinterest page because I thought, well, maybe I should get myself on Pinterest. So it is up there. /trying years. That's the same with all of my socials, except for my YouTube. I need 1,000 subscribers before I can name that one. So if you would kindly head over, because I'm quite far off that at the moment. If you wanted to go over and search for Trying Years on YouTube and give me a little subscribe there, that would be wonderful too. Thank you so much. For something completely different now, have you heard about Pregnant Then Screwed? They are an incredible organisation who offer support for women who have faced maternity or pregnancy discrimination. And that includes, and I've spoken to them actually because of questions that have come up in the hangout, they offer free legal advice and also a mentorship scheme. And I've got to be honest, that is the tip of the iceberg because they do so much more than that. So do go and check them out. So it's Pregnant Then Screwed. The work they do for pregnant women and mothers is fantastic. They also recently sent out a survey and the results have just been published. And they state that 90% of pregnant women said that the restrictions, and we're talking about COVID here, are having a negative impact on their mental health. And that a staggering, but I have to say understandable, 97% have heightened anxiety around childbirth due to the restrictions on labour. If you're already struggling even a little bit due to being pregnant after infertility or loss, then any additional stress is going to be really, really hard to take on. And that's one of the reasons that I've created my first ever Coping with an Anxious Pregnancy workshop, which is happening on Saturday, December the 19th at 9:30 a.m. It's an hour long workshop, and I'll be sending everyone who joins a free workbook, because I really want this to be about you and for it to be interactive and to give you an opportunity to write down your thoughts, to create your own affirmations, and to ask lots of questions too. It's only £10 to register, and I truly believe that it will give you some of the tools you need to support you through your pregnancy, no matter what the reasons for your anxiety. I know from personal experience and from speaking to so many of you that there is a worry that the anxiety we feel can affect the bonding and attachment we have with our little ones. And that's why I was so happy to sit down and chat to Julianne from Parenthood in Mind. Julianne is a perinatal psychologist, and more than that, she is a wonderful, calm and measured individual. And when she talks, oh my goodness, I am just enthralled. I really am. And it turns out, not only do I listen intently, but I cry. Like, honestly, I was welling up and in tears when she was talking during our conversation. So much of what she said resonated with me personally, and it helps to hear, because I know that I feel validated when I listen. But it also makes me so sad, because I know that so many of us feel that way, and I hate that for us. That's the reason, though, that this podcast exists and why I do all that I do in this area. And I want to thank you so much for listening and for all of your support, because that is a huge part of this being able to happen. So thank you so much. I won't go on any further because we just want to get on with the show, other than to say please to subscribe, rate and review the podcast. And I really hope that you enjoy this conversation. I truly do. That's it from me for this week. Take care. Bye-bye. Hi there, Julianne. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks very much for inviting me along today to have this chat with you, Kat.
Oh, you're so welcome. I have long enjoyed, is that the right word, but been a fan of your work over on Instagram and beyond. I've used one of your psychologists myself personally, and the psychologists I'm talking about are part of what makes up Parenthood in Mind, which is the organisation you run. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about who you are, what you do, and also Parenthood in Mind.
And my name is Julianne Bouteleb. I'm a perinatal psychologist, and I've been working with parents-to-be and parents, their bumps and babies, for about 20 years now. I started off in the NHS with Sure Start. Maybe people know about Sure Start Children's Centres. That's how I initially started off. But one of my big passions, Kat, is in the perinatal world, we talk about starting from conception to 1 year post-birth. But actually, what's always interested me is the whole struggle around conception. I would often be seeing people over the last 20 years who'd be coming with maybe attachment issues with their baby, or, you know, attachment issues with their partner, and really puzzled as to why that was happening. And then we'd unpick the story, what I call the reproductive story. And what we'd hear was a long, long story trailing back many years of trying to conceive, going through IVF, perhaps going through donor conception, surrogacy, whatever the route they took. And this then impacting within their parenthood journey and becoming parents to their longed for baby. So that's my passion. Parenthood in Mind, we're a team. We're all online at the minute. There's 16 of us. We're all accredited psychotherapists and psychologists, and we have special interest and experience within the perinatal period. So we work with the couple, we work with people going through IVF, we work with pregnancy loss and stillbirth, for example, but we also really importantly work with parents to be in pregnancy, helping them prepare for birth, and then also with the parent and the babies. So whether that's twins or triplets or singletons. And that's the really important different bit about what we do. So we can accompany you all the way through the journey. And different people need us at different times along the reproductive journey.
Brilliant. Thank you. And just for anyone who is new to this word, because if you are finally pregnant right now and it's taken you a while to get there, I understand, Julianne understands, that Stepping into the world of listening to pregnancy podcasts or looking for pregnancy support can be difficult, and you're going to come up against words that you haven't wanted to engage with or find out about before. So perinatal, as Julianne has mentioned, it's the period of time from when you first become pregnant up until a year after giving birth. It's that whole period. It's the prenatal or antenatal and the postnatal. That's right, isn't it, Julianne?
That's right, yeah. And I think the really important bit of this is, of course, as you say, stepping into it can be very scary, because I think the reality is for many of the parents who may be listening today, or parents-to-be that are listening today, is that they may have stepped into that and had to step out, really, unfortunately, if they've lost a pregnancy or the pregnancy hasn't gone to term. And so that makes it even scarier, doesn't it, to be sort of negotiating your way through a perinatal journey. The other way that people may know at CAT is perinatal mental health services. So usually at a booking and appointment, people will be given information about sorts of mental health issues that may happen in pregnancy. You know, anxiety, depression, we know a lot about. They do happen in pregnancy, which people aren't often aware. But your midwife at the booking in visit may ask you a question about that and may indeed refer you to someone like myself. So a psychologist, who we have 7 years training. We're trained in understanding how the mind and the brain works. We're trained in understanding how relationships work, how very particularly in early parenthood, we may be sort of preoccupied again with our own parenting experience, for example, who our parents were and how we want to do it the same as them or not. And again, we're very, very able and confident in being able to help you unravel all of those different themes and experiences so that you are able to become the parent that you want to be. So hopefully that explains what a perinatal psychologist is.
And you mentioned there about relationships, and actually you took one of our speaker sessions in the Hangout quite recently. Well, recently, I think it was right near the beginning, and talking about relationships and the impact of relationships, or the impact of pregnancy on relationships. We know those who have gone through a long trying to conceive journey, for whatever reason, that can impact our relationships, as can the pregnancy too, because of the anxiety and worry and concern. And so if anyone is a member already of the Hangout or is looking to join, you can listen to the audio of that session anytime once you're in there. But today we're going to be focusing on two topics, well, one topic, I guess, but subheadings within that is like bonding and attachment. You've already touched upon the fact that people might have stepped into this realm before now, but then had to leave prematurely because of loss, or others have wanted it so for so long and now it's happening, are too worried about kind of committing to actually realizing that they're admitting that they're pregnant. So that is going to undoubtedly, I would say, I don't, you know, if someone isn't feeling this, I don't want to make them feel like they should, but I, from my experience personally, and from a lot of the experiences that I hear about, it does have an impact, unfortunately, on initially the ability to connect with our pregnancies. And it's really hard as well, because to begin with, you can't feel anything, you can't see anything, you don't necessarily have any symptoms or feel any different. You know, some people do, but not always. So you can actually understand why it's difficult to connect for anyone at the beginning of a pregnancy in many ways. But for anyone within this community, it is going to be probably that bit harder. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm really glad to hear you say that, of course, first pregnancies, there is a normal level of anxiety anyway. You know, we start to experience ourselves in very different ways. You know, our bodies change, our relationships change, who we're seen as in the workplace or within our families change. And that, of course, is really amplified when we've been on this journey, you know, for many years to get to this place of pregnancy. So I think there's real anxiety. And I want to differentiate, because, of course, a lot of the research says that parents coming through pregnancy after infertility are usually more anxious than parents who've spontaneously conceived. But I want to differentiate a little bit between what we're talking about, because, as I say, first of all, anxiety is very normal anyway. This is a huge transition in anyone's life. Second of all, the anxiety, as we know, may actually be more linked to trauma. And so that's the stepping back into this, you know, perinatal space when you have unfortunately experienced loss. And I think the other thing is that the scenarios that we're stepping back into can be very triggering. So if you take that the normal route to pregnancy, let's say with IVF, is that you possibly have come to a clinic, you've had scans, you've had injections, you've had numerous, possibly helpful, possibly not so helpful, engagements with professional staff. And now here you are again. And I think often people who become pregnant following years of trying and obviously through IVF, they really feel that lurch into the unknown when they leave the clinic. It's fascinating because Israel and Scandinavia are two of the health systems that actually allow a bit of a follow through from the fertility clinic into the national health systems. We don't. So, of course, one of the first moments of anxiety is that you rock up into the antenatal class or into the booking appointment. And of course, you have to give your whole story. So that in and of itself can be very triggering. You know, things that they, you know, are common or garden, you know, having to have a scan, obviously waiting for the other shoe to drop is a very common experience that people have. They can't quite get it into their heads they're pregnant until perhaps they get to the 20-week scan, or indeed for those who may have lost at a, you know, particular stage of pregnancy, they can't necessarily relax until that stage is passed. So I think the anxiety that we talk about can often be actually trauma, fertility trauma that, you know, I'm, as you know, very passionate about talking about. Part of that also is, of course, what we know the couple have done to get this far, Kat. And often what they've done is they've fragmented the journey. So they've said to themselves, okay, we're going into this cycle. We're going to do the best they can. Then we get to egg retrieval. Excellent. Then we get to the next stage, so that we fragment the whole journey. And of course, what's very difficult then, that's a way that they've protected themselves, if you like, is then to open that up. So in other words, we've used ways of coping that have been very helpful this far. You know, we call it fragmentation, or another word that I use a lot is emotional cushioning. So in order to take the blow off anything that might happen, lots of the individuals and couples I work with will tell me, I don't want to get excited. I'm okay. I'll do what I need to do. I know I'm pregnant. But beyond that, no, I don't want to, you know. So they sort of slightly turn the volume down on feelings so they can get through. Now, that, of course, is a very plausible way of coping. But the difference now, and as the pregnancy progresses, is that actually you do have to engage with the unborn baby. You know, we know that when attachment starts prenatally, it can make for very secure attachments post-birth. However, a word of warning, because I know this is a stick that many of the IVF couples I see beat themselves up with. And they'll say, but everybody seems to be buying buggies. They're already doing up the nursery. So-and-so is only 24 weeks pregnant. She's planning, you know, the reveal. And I'll say, look, your journey is unique. You do not need to do what others do. You need to find your way through this so that you're able to feel supported enough. And so what I often say to people, Kat, is let yourself have moments of meeting. You don't need to be talking all the time and planning all these things. Let yourself have a time, you know, maybe in the evening after you've had a bath or a shower, just to sit and stroke your belly and maybe allow yourself feel the baby move, or you know, allow yourself, you know, think about the baby in your mind, who they're going to be. And I think that's really important, because I think A, couples often feel really bad. They're the lucky ones. Oh my goodness, you know, we should be totally ecstatic. And there's often expectations, isn't there, that they should be ecstatic. But of course, no, ecstatic is far too strong an emotion. They try to do slow and steady emotionally across the pregnancy. The other thing I want to say today to people is that if you are feeling anxious and you have had a history of anxiety, there's absolutely no shame in reaching out to, for example, our team to talk it through with somebody, or to your midwife, because we know, you know, this is a vulnerable time anyway, and these sorts of issues can reemerge. But the research over 20 years is really clear. The more that you can be supported through this, the better. So if you are feeling anxious and you need, let's say, an extra scan, ask the midwife. And in my experience, you know, health professionals are usually very open to finding out what it is that you need. Can you ask for longer appointments? The other thing I'd love to campaign with, Kat, and you and you know, Becky and others, I'd love to get pregnant after infertility sticker. You know, the way that you have the baby loss sticker, the teardrop. I'd love to get a version of that for people's notes. So people know they may need a little bit more reassurance. They want to feel confident. They want to feel connected to their babies, but they may just need a little bit more help along the way. A supportive partner is key, and social support, particularly tailored social support, is also key. So of the type that you would be offering in the Hangout.
Like, so much of it, it resounds so much with what I talk about. It really does. Like, our values are so aligned. When you talk about the fact that there's no care from fertility clinic to NHS clinic, like, it's something that I'm so passionate about. As you know, I recently did a survey, and 69% of people said that they didn't receive any care once they had had that positive pregnancy test. And what people don't necessarily realize, and I hope with work that lots of people are doing now, they are realizing that pregnancy isn't the goal. It's just it is the very brilliant next step in the journey, and it's a place that we definitely all want to be if we're on a fertility journey, but it doesn't mean that it's not worrying and fear inducing and anxiety inducing and all of that. And it's so interesting that you say about, doesn't surprise me that you encourage that support, but that there is, you know, research out there to also recommend the fact that the more support and the more tailored support that you get, like, that's what's important. You want people who get it. I say it all the time, and it sounds so easy to say, but you want that community. You want people who understand, a place where you can share without judgment. And whether that be Instagram, whether that be nodding along to this podcast, whether that be seeing a counselor or a psychologist, whether that be in the Hangout, everyone looks for that support differently. Yeah. Like with everything in life, you know, we are all different, but know and hear that it is the right thing to do. You are not saying that you're not strong, or, you know, by asking for it, you should, we are encouraging you. I did it. I saw a counselor. I sought support from my peers when I was pregnant. Yeah. It's what people should do.
And the thing is, just to add to that, Kat, that, you know, in a way, that's one of the very unexpected gifts of becoming a parent through IVF and after infertility, is that you start building your tribe now. Because again, if we look at the parenthood research, the parents that do best across, as we've called it, the perinatal period up to 1 year post-birth, are the parents who are able to share the tasks together, so they feel supported by each other, and they have that wider sort of onion structure with lots of different types of support that they can avail of. And that for me is crucial, because the other bit I wanted to talk to you about was birth and preparing for birth. So one of the things that can happen as a way of coping, and I see this a lot with women in my practice, is that they become so unable to think ahead that they often don't prepare adequately for birth. They feel so overwhelmed, the thought of it. And this is where I'm going to use a fancy word called tocophobia. So tocophobia is literally the fear of giving birth. And we have primary tocophobia and secondary tocophobia. So primary tocophobia is where you've never given birth before, but you are terrified. And of course, one of the things we know in research carried out about 14 years ago is that the length of your infertility journey can really impact this happening. And what we know is that those who've been trying to conceive for over 7 years and who've never carried a pregnancy to term, they're most at risk for primary tocophobia. In other words, what they've taken in is, my body doesn't work. My body has failed. I'm not good enough. I can't do this. How in God's name am I going to think that I can give birth vaginally, or I can, you know, have a sense of agency in my body? And unfortunately, again, I think this is where the health system falls down, that there isn't enough preparation for helping people think through their birth choices. And again, you know, there's absolutely no shame. But again, a fascinating piece of research done by Jane Fisher, who's a big name in Australia, around pregnancy outcomes and infertility. She did a study a few years ago on 1,200 women, mixed, those who'd spontaneously conceived and those hadn't. And she found that women who'd come through infertility journeys were twice more likely than not to opt for an elective cesarean. Now, again, you know, that's absolutely no harm if that's what you're deciding to do. But what I would hate, and I know for a fact from some of the people that I see, I think people often go down that route because they're afraid. And that links to previous feeling of their body failing, not being good enough. It also unfortunately links to maybe very unhelpful experiences with health professionals through their fertility journey, so they don't trust that health professionals will help them. And I think also, and this might sound strange coming from me, but often health systems have read so much and heard so much about high risk pregnancies and IVF, but they often don't hold the ordinariness of it for the people that we see. That yes, if you're having a twin pregnancy, yes, perhaps if you're an older mother and you have preeclampsia, that might be considered high risk. And we know the stats point to the fact that, you know, IVF pregnancies can be higher risk. But actually, most of the women I see, they're not going through higher risk pregnancies. And what can unfortunately happen is they take that label on too quickly and again, shut down any experiences that might be important for them. Now, why is it important? It's important because all these different experiences through pregnancy, the choices we make around birth, the type of birth we have, whether or not we breastfeed, you know, how we bond after birth, all of these things are sort of stepping stones on the way to us being able to take up an identity as a mother. And so the more that we shut down those gates on ourselves, you know, the likelihood is that we come through all of this and go, spontaneous conception, fail. Getting through pregnancy unscathed, fail. Didn't, you know, deliver the baby the way I wanted, fail. You see how that can then lead to a whole catalogue of a sense of failure. And then add in the breastfeeding, and we've got somebody sitting often in front of me or my colleagues going, I don't think I, you know, somebody else should have had this baby. And you're thinking, absolutely no. So it really is important that there is space for these choices to be thought through without pressure. I really think it's important, you know, if you have the money for it, get a specialist doula. Join the hangouts that you're talking about, Kat. I remember a midwife with one of the women I was working with just said to her, I understand you've been going to all of these hypnobirthing classes. You've been doing your best to, you know, prepare for vaginal birth. And actually, I think psychologically, what you really need to know is that this baby is going to be put safely into your arms. And of course, the poor woman broke down and she said, yes. And I think that's the other thing I want to say to people who are listening. Birth is not just physiological, it is psychological. And so if you honestly believe, given all the journey that you've been through, that it's best for you to go through an elective cesarean, you're entitled to ask for that. And the NICE guidelines are there to help you ask for that. So whatever your choices are, but the most important thing is make them informed choices so that you feel you can come through and be in the best physiological and psychological shape to meet your lovely longed for baby. And that's what this is all about.
Honestly, Julianne, I am actually welling up here listening to you talk. Like, I have made so many notes for all of that, but ultimately, the overriding thing here just upsets me so much that people are struggling. And I do not want anyone to be struggling with any of that on their own. And I understand why they're struggling with it. Much of it I was worried about and had huge concerns. And I talked to hundreds of people and I know that they feel the same. And just hearing you talk about it and explain it, it validates it so much. And everything you're saying about feeling like, you know, that you've lost the trust in your body because of things that have gone before and then worrying about birth. And I know for years, like long before infertility or anything struck, I thought, oh my gosh, like giving birth, like that's just mind-blowing. And it is mind-blowing. It is a miracle in itself, quite frankly. And when you get pregnant, I always felt like, and like I say, this is all pre-fertility stuff, that it must be an almost a sense of impending doom because you know that this baby's going to come out, but you have no idea really, you know, what that's going to look like and feel like. You can hear other stories, positive or negative and all of that. But really, until you do it, you don't know, do you? And I remember being in the labor ward thinking, the next few days are going to happen. I've got no idea what that looks like. And so add on to that, whether it be, you know, months, years, loss, infertility, it's big. It really is. So when you were talking, something that really kind of the penny dropped was around the consultant led. So I don't think you use those words necessarily, but a lot of us wanted, the words you used were about being high risk. And I know I wanted a consultant. You think they're the biggest, baddest people to look after you. Brilliant. And that's what you want, because you've had all that contact with this is fertility, you know, possibly similarly with baby loss. You know, you want that contact, you want that care, you want the best person in that hospital looking after you. But I guess the issues around that are that there is an anxiety that could be attached to seeing a consultant. And I spoke to Professor Gordon Smith for one of my episodes in the first series, and he is the top guy at Adam Brooks. He is so on his game. And he said that he says to everyone, you don't want to see me. You want a normal pregnancy. You know, if you're seeing him, there is potentially an issue. And that's not what we want. We want to be midwife led, because we are quote unquote normal in our pregnancies.
And that's the bit that gets lost, Kat. And I think what I'm saying is, whatever anyone chooses, and I promise you, I'm a huge advocate for this. I work a lot with Make Birth Better around birth trauma. We advocate for, you know, midwife-led units and whatever women want. But I think what can happen in the journey is that we lose the ordinary. We lose our sense of agency. We lose what we can still do. And that's only important almost in hindsight, you know, and a little bit like once the baby comes, of course, then, you know, there is this sense of actually the baby hasn't got the script, that they're the longed for special wonder child. They just come into the world as they come. And I think what gets lost in the journey, if I may say, is that we build up fantasies of who we're going to be, don't we? So we build up fantasies, perhaps, you know, that we're fit women. Yes, this bit has been a struggle, but now I'm pregnant. I'm going to be the earth goddess I've always wanted to be. And, you know, then you're hit with a missed miscarriage or, you know, placenta previa or whatever. And then it's another dent on your sense of confidence as, you know, a mother to be. And what I'm saying is, as much as you can, hold on to what you want to be and who you want to be, because that's important. They're the early stepping stones in becoming who you want to be. By the same token, along the journey, you may realize that perhaps you aren't an earth goddess. I know I had to realize that very quickly. And actually, you know, I did want an assisted birth. And again, that's that word, isn't it? Everything has been assisted. So this I want to do on my own. And of course, this is all a learning. And one of the most difficult things can be for those of us who've come through this journey is, there's no shame in being assisted. This is going to lead to better outcomes for you, for the bonding with the baby. And actually, you can't be a mother all on your own. That's not going to work. And so it's holding on to fantasies, but being able to tweak them as we go along the journey. And that is important because, of course, many of us who come to this journey after a long, long time, we carry fantasies of ourselves with our babies on our breasts. We carry fantasies of, you know, walking along with our sisters, perhaps, and, you know, having a particular buggy. And in a way, the next piece, which is around birth and what happens after birth, is that this fantasy can come clashing up against the reality that perhaps the birth hasn't gone quite the way that you wanted. Perhaps again, you know, very sadly, unfortunately, you know, babies might get separated from moms because they've come out too quickly, or, you know, perhaps you need a repair or some, you know, you need to be seen to after you've given birth. We know some babies, if they're born prematurely, may have to go into the NICU. So again, there's a sense of separation. You know, all of these things are possibilities. And I guess one of the things that is really important then is that we learn to flex across this journey. That we learn to, and again, I might sound like I'm contradicting myself, but we hold on to what's important to us, that we're able to flex with it. And I think this brings me on to sort of postnatal experiences.
Just before we get there, I just want to, going with that idea of flex and going back to about the consultant, and you talk there about NICU and all of that. I think where I said earlier on that I feel like the penny's dropped, is there a different, like, an, this is not rocket science, what I'm about to say. It's just, you know, how kind of you just get images in your mind. There are different people who are there to support you through different things. And some people, you know, that for them physically, birth-wise, it might be midwives in your home. It might be consultants. It might be anaesthetists. It might be the NICU nurses and doctors. Yeah. Like, there are going to be medical specialists who are going to be looking after that kind of physical side of things. Mm. But that's what they look after and what we need. And that whole, it takes a village. We know, because, you know, if you're listening to this, you probably do know that infertility, pregnancy, loss, you know, getting pregnant, staying pregnant can take a village, as is being pregnant all the way through all of that and birth and onwards. And that's what we're talking about. That is what you mentioned earlier on about that support being there. And it is going to be different. Some of it's going to be medical. Some of it's going to be psychological. Some of it's just going to be a mate to go and have a glass of wine with, you know, and just think about all the different needs you have in your life. Your pregnancy and postnatal is no different. You need to be flexible with the types of support you need and where you're getting it from, because we do need this full rounded support. Does that make sense? Am I just going on one?
And I love what you're doing with your hands, because that's how I imagine. Often I talk to people about an onion. What does your onion look like?
Yes.
What? You know, that we need layers of help and different, exactly that you said. I mean, maybe it's a box set today. Maybe it's going up, you know, to the park with your partner on Sunday. We need different versions, because in a way, if we can get this right now, that is your support base for when the baby comes. And in a way, as I said, this is the very weird bit. This is the gift, if you like, of infertility, that you start to do this in a very deliberate way. Whereas those, you know, who fall pregnant, and, you know, 60% of pregnancies in the UK are unplanned, believe it or not, they may not have a sense that these things are important. And I guess I want to detach the sense of stigma and shame, that actually this is part of what you should be doing as you prepare to become a parent. We call it, so Daniel Stern and his wife, Nadia Brookweiler Stern, wrote a beautiful book called The Birth of a Mother. And he talks a lot about what he calls the motherhood constellation. So when you were doing this with your hands, I was thinking of stars, the Milky Way, and that you pluck out of wherever the sort of help that you need. And that can be a doula, that can be a friend who's gone through it already. I think one of the things, again, that I said I find really sad for some people is that they stay avoidant. They don't go into the birth community. They don't look at their choices. And that then can lead to this sense of shock once the baby comes. Because, of course, what's one of the ways that we've all come through this is to avoid the mother and baby world. You know, I don't want to pick up a magazine. I don't want to listen to a podcast. No, I haven't seen my sister since she had her baby 4 months ago. So we sort of cocoon ourselves, which is fine for a while. But the difficulty is that we get stuck in the cocoon. And that's not any help to us as we move towards that later stage of pregnancy and preparing for the birth and postpartum. We need to gradually come out of the cocoon.
And can I just say, and then we will talk on or move on to one of my kind of like the postnatal and the breastfeeding, that kind of thing. But the thing that keeps coming into my mind as we're talking is, you deserve this. You really do deserve this pregnancy, this support. Yeah. You deserve it. You don't need to do it on your own. And you shouldn't do it on your own.
No.
I would go as far to say is you can't do it. One can't do it on their own. And you deserve all of the support that is out there, all of the support that you can find. You deserve it. I just can't say that enough. But we will move on, because I'm just, you know, like, we're to talk about postnatal. And sorry, I did stop you when you were going on to that. I just had to kind of get that all out. But one of my huge things, as you know, is, and this is something that I did experience myself, and we talked about it, I think I'd already had Ren at this point, but is how you've got through the birth and all of the things that you've talked about already. I get the sense, this is anecdotal, but I definitely get the sense that the fertility community, and I include infertility, pregnancy loss within that, we have a stronger desire perhaps to breastfeed, because we are, and you've talked about it before, you know, we're desperate not to fail again. We want our bodies to be able to do this on its own without assistance, as, you know, the word that you mentioned. And I know that I felt that. I was absolutely desperate to breastfeed. It was something that I really, really wanted to do. And I was very lucky, like two hard, hard weeks. It was so hard. I can't even express how hard it was, but I did get there. And I just find this fascinating, feels like a bit of a flippant word, but can we explore that a little bit, the connection between fertility pregnancies and the desire to breastfeed?
I'm going to go very high tech on you as we move into talking about this, because linking where we've just been, which is that you deserve the support and you need the support. And I'm going to say, actually, neurobiologically, your baby benefits. Now I'm going to get really high tech. In the last stage of pregnancy, you have a lot of stress hormones. So you have very high levels of progesterone, very high levels of adrenaline. And obviously through the birth, you may be exposed and the baby may be exposed to lots of stress hormones, adrenaline, noradrenaline, epinephrine, norepinephrine. And so what can happen, depending on what sort of birth you've had, is that you both might come through the birth stressed. Now, why does that matter? It matters because, you know, and again, if we link this back to feeling stressed through pregnancy, one of the things people are often very preoccupied by is, oh, will my anxiety impact the baby? And I'll say, no, not unless we're at very, very high level trauma. But what we do know is that anxiety hormones can cross the placenta and they can have knock-on effects, for example, when we're birthing. So if we're too stressed and we don't have, as I've said all along in this podcast, we've been talking about the cocoon, about the need for support around you, what can happen is that the stress hormones get in the way of the hormones that we need to birth. So oxytocin. And of course, oxytocin and prolactin are involved in the letdown reflex. So in other words, breast milk coming in 2 or 3 days after birth. So we know, and this is one of my specialisms I've been talking about for a few years now, is birth trauma and breastfeeding. I'm starting to make links now with fertility trauma and breastfeeding, because we know where there isn't enough support, that gets, lactogenesis is the posh word for it, doesn't happen easily. And often I will work with women who say to me, I was desperate to breastfeed, but the milk never came in, or it never came in the way that I needed it to. But we've got two bits of a coin here. We have a very stressed mom and maybe a very stressed baby, you know, depending on the birth, depending on what the pregnancy has been. And I think one of the things I see very often with women for whom breastfeeding means a lot is that they often adapt very stressed poses, you know, that they're so stressed, overcome with stress. It starts to mean an awful lot. And of course, babies can pick up on this. Babies tune into things that we learn to tune out of as adults. They're very intensely preoccupied with how they're held, with the tone of our voice, with our breathing, for example. So you can imagine picking up a baby and putting it on its breast, and what it's hearing is your heart beating. It's sensing that you're stressed. And so the baby can get stressed. And again, the baby's trying to learn a new skill here. So again, we're back to this, hopefully the main message of this podcast, which is a little bit like Russian dolls. You need support so that you can relax into this new skill. That will then allow a whole cascade of the hormones that you need to produce milk. And that then will be conveyed to your baby. And he or she will be able to take in the milk. What's really important is that this is a rite of passage for many who come through infertility. There are links to how long you've been through that journey. And for those who've come through a journey of more than 2 years, breastfeeding can be more difficult. If you've had a C-section, particularly an emergency C-section, that's also implicated, Kat. But there's also, I think, the psychological bit, which can trip us up, which is, this might be my only chance. If I don't do this now, I'm not going to get a second chance. And that's very hard. That's very, very hard, isn't it? Again, it's coming back to your brain, your baby, your body needs support. Get yourself the early tailored support. Get yourself the tailored support early. Do not struggle through with this. There are so many things. And remember, it's a skill. You're learning to be a mom. And your baby's learning to be your baby. Attachment is a process. It doesn't happen overnight. And often people say to me, oh, but I thought as soon as I saw him, I'd fall in love. And I said, well, tell me when you met your partner. Was it love at first sight? For some of us, it is. For some of us, it isn't. But again, the message here is you're both learning, you both need support, and give yourself time. This is a process.
Oh, I just want to ask you so much about so much that you said. Like, I've spent the entire time you've been talking just sitting here nodding along, nodding along. Like, yes, yes, yes. And I would, like, one of the things that I told myself repeatedly while we were trying to breastfeed was what you've mentioned there, that I am learning this and yeah. Ren was learning it. And she had just yeah. learned to breathe, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is brand new. And I know that there are people out there whose babies come out and immediately yeah. latch. And that's wonderful. But exactly like you, the analogy with falling in love, it doesn't always happen in that split second. Yeah. And for me, it was actually the kind of physical understanding. And I consider myself yeah. a fairly bright, intelligent individual, but the actual physical understanding of where the nipple goes into the mouth and needs to go. Yeah. Like, this is, it takes a while. And so many people said to me, all of a sudden it'll click, all of a sudden. Mm. And it can take days, it can take weeks. But it, for me, it did. And for many, it does. Like, I was lucky I didn't have the issue with the milk production. I know that some people suffer from that, and there's, you know, various things that you can try. Mm-hmm. I know people who have been through incredible journeys and using, you know, whether it be combi feeding, but also ways of attaching so that the formula like feeds when the baby's breastfeeding as well. Like, there are so many things out there. And if anyone wants to ask about that, I can point you in the direction of someone who is, you know, just talks about that, you know, and has done such incredible work on with herself and her daughter on that way of feeding. But there is, oh, there's just, there's so much that happens. And you talk about, like, I just, honestly, we can't go on any longer, but there's just so much I want to recognize of what you said about the seeing, you know, seeing the baby and actually physically falling in love. I know that there was a conversation, I can't remember now whether it was in my DMs or on the Hangout, from someone who felt like that. They didn't feel that connection. And I have said this before, I will say it again quickly now. It wasn't until I saw a photo of Ren on the screen when the bounty people came round and showed me the picture they'd taken that I thought, I love you. You're a baby and I'm going to look after and nurture you, but I don't know you. You're a whole new human being that I need to get to know and understand. Yeah. And it wasn't until I saw her on that screen that that clicked for me. Yeah. And then I like backed down on myself and thought, you know what, like, this is going to take time. And and it just, like, oh, there's just,
can I just add to that, Kat?
Please.
I think those of us who, you know, travel this journey through pregnancy loss and you know, finally meeting our babies, of course, what we carry very strongly are the myths of motherhood. And of course, the myth, the big myth, is this is natural, this is instinctive, you'll just know. No, sorry, BS. And I'm talking as somebody with 20 plus years of experience, 7 years of training. That is the biggest BS going. And that's part of what I talk about, you know, in a lot of the stuff I do on Instagram. It takes time, like any relationship. The further complicating thing is that, of course, one of the things, to go back to one of the things we spoke about at the very beginning of the podcast, is that you may have been emotionally cushioning yourself. There is something overwhelming of finally seeing this baby. And for those of us who perhaps have lost babies previously, that may also be mixed with grief. And again, nobody tells you that. This can be very, very confusing. So the first few months postpartum is just a maelstrom of different emotions, sensations, body, relationship. And again, I think one of the things that can happen for co-parents and partners and fathers is that they can often feel pushed to one side in this as well. We don't often talk enough about them. You know, they can, through their journey to parenthood, can often feel pushed to one side, told they're doing the easy bit. But of course, one of the lovely things, and I do want to end with good news, Professor Helen Allen, who works at the University of Middlesex, she just published a paper last year. And some of the really wonderful good stuff about parenting after infertility is, of course, that the fathers and co-parents show very high levels of involvement with their children, much higher than those who conceive spontaneously. They also have a real sense of protectiveness towards their baby and their partner. And naturally, these couples want to move away from the experience of infertility. But what they often forget is to celebrate where they are. And for me, it is about celebrating your journey is unique. Your journey to your baby is unique. It's not less than, it's different, but there are lots of pluses. And I think there will be times ahead where no doubt the infertility experience comes back into view, whether that's thinking about another sibling or whether it's as the baby grows and weans and so on. There will be losses along the way as well. What I really want people who are listening to know is that this is a journey that, you know, puts you through the mill in lots of ways, physiologically and psychologically, but there are enormous gifts that go along with it. The tribe, the people we meet along the way that we have to come to these things really deliberately and thoughtfully. We don't just get to, you know, just pop being a parent on for just, you know, a second or two. We really have to think long and hard about whether or not we want to be parents. And in the long run, and all the research shows this, that means that we're very involved parents. It means that we're often very grateful and patient parents, albeit a little bit more anxious than others. But that's the message that I want to leave people with today.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Julianne. I urge people to go over and check you out on Instagram or look at your website to find a bit more about you. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. I don't know, your voice, like, it just all makes me feel calm and reassured. And I hope that other people get that as well, you know, that this is the right thing to do. This is what you need. This is going to help and support you make this experience, which is unique and sometimes really, really bloody difficult.
Yeah.
But hopefully in the long run, you know, it will make it amazing as well. Super. Thank you so much again.
And really welcome.
Speak to you really soon. Okay. Definitely. Take care. Really Thank welcome. You.
Bye now. Take care.